The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Dory Monson's Big Show. Brandi Crews filling in for a second day. I'd love to chat. We got a lot of news to get to. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Breaking news.
You heard it at the top of the news from CBS. There are two dead in NATO nation Poland after Russian missiles apparently crossed the border out of Ukraine. There was an ongoing Russian offensive against the Ukrainian power grid. And it's our understanding, based on reports from the Associated Press, citing intelligence officials, that in the course of this Russian missile barrage, again, targeting Ukraine's power grid, some of those missiles crossed into other nations or impacted other nations. Moldova, for instance, which is just a tiny nation northwest of Ukraine. Apparently, they were plunged into darkness. But then the Associated Press says two were killed when Russian missiles crossed into Poland, about 15 miles from the Ukrainian border. This is a huge deal, obviously. You know, one thing that President Biden has said over and over and over is we will defend every inch of NATO territory. We will defend every inch of NATO territory. And of course, that was the conversation around, will the U.S. send troops on the ground into Ukraine to assist in Ukraine? And the thought being that, hey, Ukraine is not a NATO country, but if Russia's war were to spill into a NATO country, then the United States has an obligation via that partnership to do something about it. So far, there haven't been any remarks of significance from Poland's government. Apparently, according to the Associated Press, they were in emergency meetings for most of the day today so far. And so we'll have to see how the United States responds. I know that in the Cairo radio newsroom, we've got some calls in to members of our congressional delegation, including Congressman Adam Smith, about, you know, what the U.S. would have to do from here, what the U.S. would choose to do from here. And again, it does not sound as if this was some sort of Russia decided, hey, let's fire missiles into Poland. It sounds like these are missiles that didn't hit their target in Ukraine. But does it matter? Does it matter if this wasn't some sort of planned moment of targeting against a NATO nation? And I'm not sure the answer to that. And so the U.S. government, I'm sure, will come out and have something to say about this. And Russia's going to have to answer to this unless it was intentional. Unless you see Vladimir Putin, you know, he's had some high profile losses lately, having to pull troops out of at least one major region of Ukraine. And so was this sloppy military work where they were trying to target something in Ukraine and didn't? Or was this something more sinister and more targeted, directed at NATO nations? So we're going to be tracking that. And again, we'll have the latest in the newscast as well as we start to hear some responses from our congressional delegation and certainly from the president of the United States. All right. Coming up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Donald Trump, we're all just on. It's a waiting game. I'm shocked, Nicole, that it has not been leaked out, the exact content of Donald Trump's big announcement.
Well, I guess it's because we're all just hoping.
Hoping
it's
what?
Not what we think it is.
Why?
Right?
Well, yeah, you're making a lot of assumptions. Some people listening might be hoping it is what
I know.
You think it is.
I said, oh, well, yeah, I guess you're right. There are a few people. But I think at this point, if Republicans want to win in 2024, we're hoping that it's not Donald Trump. But
yeah, I mean, I agree. And look, you know, I think it's, I just posted a poll on some of my social media pages of what people want. It is roundly anticipated, in case you've been living under a rock, which I don't think Dory Monson listeners live under a rock.
Right.
Widely anticipated that Donald Trump is going to, at 9 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. Pacific time, announce that he is going to run in 2024 for president of the United States. It would be his third campaign for president of the United States. And it, to me, the timing is odd. You know, I think he probably thought, like the rest of us, to be frank, mm-hmm. that Republicans were going to do better last Tuesday. But it really seems like a lot of people who'd been solidly in Donald Trump's corner are starting to sort of Ron DeSantis down in Florida. And it's been fascinating, by the way, to watch Fox News change its tone a little bit on Donald Trump, and other Murdoch holdings like the New York Post kind of take this turn on Donald Trump. And I don't, maybe it's because Rupert Murdoch just wants, you know, they care about money, right? And mm-hmm. so if you know, I think Donald Trump was good for the economy. I don't think anyone can argue that we were in a much better place economically right. under Donald Trump. That's true. But it doesn't matter if you can't win. You could really, really believe in Donald Trump's policy prescriptions for the economy. But if he can't get in the White House, then it doesn't matter.
Right. Things have changed.
Right. Things have changed. And so that's the challenge here. And by the way, another big loss for Donald Trump endorsed candidates last night in Arizona, Carrie Lake, which I got that completely wrong. I thought Carrie Lake was going to win handedly. Mm-hmm. That's a race I got wrong. So Carrie Lake losing that race, and she had been a live or die supporter of Donald Trump. And so I think there's a couple questions. Obviously, we're going to just assume that he's going to announce a presidential bid, although I've heard some strange rumors. Like I was saying yesterday, I heard a rumor that he's going to announce that his son, Don Trump Jr., is running.
Who I think at this point might have a better chance. But I think maybe that's why it hasn't leaked, is that there was no firm decision going into the announcement that this was happening. He was just saying there's going to be an announcement one way or the other. So maybe he was open to what happened in the elections, deciding what the announcement was going to be today.
Yeah, but you've seen a lot of high-profile Republicans. Chris Christie was speaking to Republican governors, I believe it was this morning or yesterday, and he echoed what Maryland Governor Larry Hogan said about he thinks Donald Trump has cost Republicans gains in the last three elections. Chris Christie said the same thing. We also heard that from former Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, who was a Republican. And so, you know, again, it goes back to you could believe in Donald Trump, but do you believe in his capacity to win? Do you believe in his capacity to win? Because I will admit, and somebody, one of our listeners pointed out yesterday, like, hey, Donald Trump actually has a pretty high success rate pre-primary and through the primary to today of candidates he's endorsed winning. And that's true in some instances. And he does. It's very impressive. But it's waning. And the big important races, Pennsylvania Senate race, the Senate race in Georgia, which is now off to a runoff, the Arizona governor's race, despite their, you know, backing from Trump, and down in the 3rd Congressional District in Washington, Joe Kent.
Right. And I know that you've never been a fan of his. And that's a good example of why I think he's done, because you can't split the party and expect to win any race. You have to come together as a party and support this person. And if that can't happen again, I think if he had kept his mouth shut, kept his profile low over the last 2 years, it's possible he could have come back and ran again, and it would have reignited an excitement and been something different. But because he kept doing these rallies, because he kept ticking off the people that were already not big fans, I think that he blew it.
Yeah, the party is split, and I do believe that. I believe that's what happened in the 3rd Congressional District, where Tiffany Smiley was able to win the vote there, but Joe Kent wasn't. I think there were some Republicans thoroughly turned off at Jamie Herrera Butler being forced out for her impeachment vote. And yes, I've always said I don't like Donald Trump. I just, for me, it's his personality. It's his moral characteristics. I'm not able to bifurcate the person from the policies. I know some people are. Just personally speaking, I'm not, and I just don't enjoy who he is as a human being. And so I never voted for Donald Trump. But also now I'm, you know, seeing that, and I do acknowledge, however, that the country was in a pretty good place under Donald Trump. Like, yes, he brought all this drama and stuff that was such a distraction. But we were in a much better position. And so I do acknowledge he did have some success as the president of the United States. But that doesn't mean that I care to deal with the drama of it. And so then we kind of look to Ron DeSantis. I don't see any scenario where Ron DeSantis does not run for president. And he was asked, by the way. So Donald Trump, as you know, right before the midterm election, came out and dubbed Ron DeSantis Ron DeSanctimonious. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, okay, shots fired. And that was weird. And a lot of Republicans, you know, Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, they spoke out and said, Donald Trump, what are you doing? Why would you, you know, do that to
he's
a popular
being Donald Trump?
Right. He's being petty. And so Donald Trump has reinvigorated those attacks after Ron DeSantis did overwhelmingly well in Florida. So Ron DeSantis was having this press event. It's always funny to me when politicians have these media events, right? And they're there for something else. I want to say this one was about, he had members of the military in the background. I don't know what it was a totally unrelated situation, but he's got all these people behind him. And then, of course, reporters are going to ask about unrelated questions. And I always love watching the people who are standing behind him when he has to answer questions like this. But so he was asked about, you know, not only the Trump announcement, but, you know, Trump's sort of recent attacks on him.
Well, you know, one of the things I've learned in this job is when you're leading, when you're getting things done, yeah, you take incoming fire. That's just the nature of it. I roll out of bed in the morning. I've got corporate media outlets that have a spasm just the fact that I'm getting up in the morning, and it's constantly attacking. And this is just what's happened. I don't think any governor got attacked more, particularly by corporate media, than me over my 4-year term. And yet, I think what you learn is all that's just noise. And really what matters is, are you leading? Are you getting in front of issues? Are you delivering results for people? And are you standing up for folks? And if you do that, then none of that stuff matters. And that's what we've done. We focused on results and leadership. And, you know, at the end of the day, I would just tell people to go check out the scoreboard from last Tuesday night.
And then the people with him burst into applause. So there's a couple things here. I agree with like 99% of what DeSantis said there. And I think it was a very big response where he's saying, look, I just got reelected. You know, I'm focused on serving people. But he is a little petty, too, I will say, of DeSantis.
Well, I think it's the perfect amount because you don't want to push over and you want somebody that's going to stand up for themselves in a similar way that Trump does. However, right. When Trump fires back, it's usually petty and like and name calling and all of that. And so instead of saying, he calls out the corporate media by saying that they are not good to him, which is totally true, but he doesn't use the term fake news or anything else. He just says, hey, this is happening. This happens to me all the time. And moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you. And that's what I was going to say is what I hear from a lot of Republicans when they talk about Donald Trump. And when I try to understand, because even though I don't like him, I've always tried to understand why people do and what it is about Donald Trump that made him so popular. Because I don't believe in this mass vilification of people who support a politician that I don't. And they like his fight. You know, they think Democrats, you know, will go to the mat for their candidates and for their people, and that Republicans can be a little passe. And so they like the fight. And I see that same fight, but at an elevated level from Ron DeSantis.
Right,
he's capable of focusing on the mission at hand. But he'll be a little petty, you know, he'll stand his ground.
When I first wrote this down in our show notes, I said classy, or I called him classy. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure if that's what I would consider classy, but it is in some respect.
He's
it's
being
a
the bigger
classy
person.
For a politician. It might not be the you know, what we think of snooty politicians just, you know, playing by the book and whatever it is. But this feels like a real person that can represent real people, and it just feels more doable for the Republican Party.
And I'll also say, Obama was known for his zingers, too.
Oh, yes.
He was known for his zingers, too. And so I think that to act as if Republicans are the only ones who, you know, have a little petty bone in the body, I don't think that's true. So I personally really like DeSantis. I mean, I do not believe in it. I'm of 0% belief that Biden will run again. Physically, I just don't think so. I understand why they're saying he's going to, because they don't want to create a lame duck. But I think he'll announce next year that he's not going to allow Democratic hopefuls to get some time to get Kamala Harris out of there. I don't know how the Democratic Party with its identity obsession is going to push a black woman out of the way. But we'll see how that all plays out. But so there's a couple narratives to watch for tonight. Again, this announcement from Trump from Mar-a-Lago is coming at 6 p.m. Pacific time. One, does he say indeed he's running? And if that's the case, obviously, Mike Pence is not going to be his running mate. In fact, Mike Pence just wrote a book and he's been out doing the rounds in the news media. And he said, and he was asked, I think it was by ABC. He was asked whether he believes Trump should be president again. And he said, it's up to the American people, but, quote, I think we'll have better choices in the future. So we know Mike Pence is going to run. He doesn't have a chance in the world. And although Democrats appreciate what he did on January 6th, they still don't like the guy. It's funny because it's like Liz Cheney. you know, Liz Cheney did all this, like was vilified by a wing of the Republican Party for participating in the January 6th hearings, et cetera. And then Democrats, you know, they still don't like Liz Cheney. They still don't like what Liz Cheney stands for. And so, yeah, I mean, Pence is not going to get like sort of the lift of because of his morality that he thinks he's going to. Mike Pompeo is going to run. He's not going to have a chance. I met him the other couple weeks ago. He's a nice guy. He used to be an assistant manager at a Baskin-Robbins. Do you know that?
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I mean, he had many jobs, obviously, between that and the director of the CIA and the Secretary of State. But really loved hearing from him. Just an interesting, down-to-earth guy. And that's so cool. An American dream from assistant manager of a Baskin-Robbins to,
absolutely,
you know, all these positions of power. So there's going to be a lot of Republican candidates. But the other thing to watch for is who, you know, who is Trump going to want to run with him? And is that announcement an announcement he makes simultaneously, or does he wait for a while to do that? And so all those things are factors that we need to take into consideration. And if he announces, how heavily does he try to bash DeSantis in the process, et cetera. But what people should know, and what I already realized, and I think Ron DeSantis alluded to it there, the media is going to treat Ron DeSantis the exact same way they treated Donald Trump. So if we're hoping for some, like, you know, the media orange man bad Trump derangement syndrome is going to somehow go away, no, it's going to be DeSantis derangement syndrome.
Right. The only thing I think that will make a difference here is that he's a young guy. DeSantis is a young guy. He's been, you know, since social media has been around, he's been in a, you know, mostly an adult, like just like us. It's been in his life, most of his life. And so I think he won't be as there won't be as much to go after as Trump, because Trump was around for so much longer before.
They'll find
stuff. Sure, no, absolutely. But I think DeSantis has been planning this for much longer than Trump ever did. I think Trump, that was like, you know, oh, I got a TV show and people like it, I might as well run for president. It was not something he was planning on doing 40 years ago. Where DeSantis, I do think, has been preparing for this and has taken some better precautions.
Yeah, that's possible. And yeah, we'll see what happens with that. I do. I see that there are some Republicans who are already being pressured into sort of deciding what side that they're going to take, and how early they're going to take it. And I think the Republicans are like, I'm going to hold off on that as long as I can to try to figure it out. But again, so we'll be waiting that. I was going to get to another story, but I don't want to shortchange it. So we might push it into the next block about the city of Seattle. The city of Seattle, oh, the woe is Seattle. They're short on cash. Bummer. Meanwhile, they've had like a 93% increase in tax revenues since 2013. So forgive me if I don't feel very bad for them. But here in the last minute we have in the big lead, I just want to revisit what's going on in Ukraine, on the border of Ukraine. Again, we're tracking the situation, and I think this has major implications for the United States. Russians trying to take out Ukraine's power grid, allegedly missed, and rockets went into a NATO nation, Poland, about 15 miles from the border of Ukraine. According to the Associated Press, two people are dead in Poland. And so the question is, how does NATO respond, and what role does the United States play in that? I mean, Biden has been very weak, in my opinion, on foreign policy. And so if he's said, how many times has Biden said, we're going to defend every inch of NATO ground, we're going to defend every inch of NATO ground? And I'm not saying, like, I'm not trying to be a warmonger, but if you're the president of the United States and that's what you've said every time you've talked about Ukraine for, you know, the last few months, then if Poland has been, people have been killed in Poland, I mean, do you have to do something as the president of the United States, or does your word mean absolutely nothing? And so it's a difficult position, because it's not as if, it doesn't sound like Russia intentionally targeted Poland. It was probably some soldiers who misfired when they were trying to take out Ukraine's power grid. But the result is the same, that two people were killed in NATO territory. And now NATO needs to decide, and Poland, the United States, and our allies need to decide how they're going to respond. And that has been your big lead this hour.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
As I said, coming up, the city of Seattle says they're $200 million in the hole, despite record tax revenues. We'll discuss. And also, taxpayers on the hook for about $1.3 billion in forgiven PPP loans. I'm torn on this story. We'll discuss coming up. Brandi Crews in for Dori Monson. You know how make a woman happy.
Oh, yeah? What did I do?
Well, I almost cheered out loud here in newscast, but I'm a professional.
Yes.
So I internalized it, and I just saw someone sent us this on the text line not too long ago. Clyde Shaver's finally trailing. I'm going to give some opinions, Aaron, so it's your decision whether you want to run. But gosh, I'm so happy that liar. I think there's a lot of politicians that lie. What bothered me about Clyde Shavers, and if you're not, you heard about it in Aaron's newscast there, but this is a 10th legislative district, so it's parts of Skagit, Snohomish, and I think Island County as well. And Clyde Shavers is an impressive young man. He might be older than me, but I'm going to call him an impressive young man. He did serve our country in the Navy. He did go to Yale Law, but he felt the need to embellish his history on both fronts, saying he spent 8 years as an officer aboard a nuclear submarine, saying he was an attorney in Washington, which he has not passed the bar. Yale Law does not an attorney make. You do have to practice. You do have to pass the bar to practice law in Washington. So from Election Day to today, Clyde Shavers had been leading Republican Greg Gilday. And Aaron, was this I just heard about it in your newscast. Yeah. So was this, how recent was this latest ballot drop just
this
today?
This was as of last night.
Wow, of last night, okay.
Yeah, so 15 votes.
Well, shows how clued in I am.
I think there's still more ballots to be counted in Island County.
And he's been actually outperforming in Island County, which is kind of shocking to me because that's where the big military community is. Yeah. And the trouble is that his lies weren't exposed until a week after ballots came out. And so it's not a surprise he's not doing as well in late ballot counts because the people who voted, later had an opportunity to see him for who he was. But Greg Gilday, the Republican, as Aaron said, they're now leading by 15 votes. Nobody's going to join me in a slow clap. Yes, yes. And look, it's about one of the things that bothered me about this, and I know we were going to talk about something else, Nicole. We just so excited about this. There's many things that bothered me about this, but the Democratic Party stood by him. You might recall, I think it was 2016, there was a sitting Republican lawmaker in Olympia, and they found out he lied about his military service. And at the time, the Republican leader in Olympia told him, like, you better clear that up or get gone real fast. And so they were not going to stand for someone who had lied about their military service. So what Democrats are doing here is obvious. Do they particularly like that he lied about his military service? Probably not. I'm sure that behind the scenes they're not thrilled that they didn't vet this candidate better or that he didn't just run on what is an impressive record. But they just want a warm body. They don't care if it's, lying Clyde Shavers. They just want a Democrat in that seat because they don't see it as Clyde Shavers. They see it as a vote.
And not just a Democrat, but very Democrat. I mean, they want somebody as far to the left as they can find.
Right. And so, and it doesn't even matter to me, but, there's this thought that perhaps they're thinking, okay, let's just get Clyde Shavers in. Let's unseat Greg Gilday. And then we can ask him to leave. I don't know that they'll do that. But then they would be able to appoint a Democrat to that position, someone who they prefer. And so it's just this manipulation of voters, like, win at any cost. We're doing it for the body count in Olympia. And you're not concerned at all with sending someone to Olympia who's honest. I mean, again, I'm not saying all politicians don't have some issues with honesty. Some of them do. But this is an outright lie, an easily discoverable lie, which I think speaks to a level of intelligence. Like, this is a Yale Law grad, but you told lies that were so easily provable. So it's like your judgment is completely shot.
Did he pass the bar?
Yeah, you shouldn't even pass the bar. You know that we can Google these things, right? So again, if you're just tuning in, 10th Legislative District, there's a couple races. Let me just hold on a second. We're real time in this right now because I need to know. There was one other legislative race I was really interested in that's bumming me out. I talked about, up in the 42nd Whatcom County. I wish Simon Sefcik could pull that out. 22-year-old kid, but so smart. And he's trailing. I don't think he's going to be able to make up that deficit at this point. But still some ballots to be counted in the 10th Legislative District. But the trend has been there for Greg Gilday. He has been slowly catching up to Clyde Shavers. And as of the latest ballot drop, Greg Gilday is ahead by 15 votes. Not a lot. But I think that is, if it holds, the appropriate outcome in this race. And hopefully it shows people that your lies will be uncovered and you cannot rely on manipulating voters to try to get you through. So we'll see what happens in that race. Let's just fit in a fun one here, because, gosh, I went off the rails. I'm sorry, Nicole. There was this report out about college majors. Andrew, what do you think is the most regretted college major? Hint, it's my major.
I don't know what your major was.
Well, you could probably take an educated guess.
Communications?
Journalism.
Oh.
If I had to guess on the most regretted, I would say art history. But
no, because people who go for art history would never regret that.
I guess.
They didn't get into it for the money.
Apparently.
Let's see. I wanted to see why this was in Blaze. Yeah. Those stricken with regret were graduates who majored in journalism, 87% of whom indicated they would choose another major if they could. And I think there's a lot that factors into that. But having been in the mainstream media for 12 years, I can tell you there's a lot of things. And I went to a great journalism college, the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. There's a lot of things that we weren't prepared for. The amount of people in the public who would despise you, which was, I think, got worse in recent years, people on both sides. And I also don't think that there was a real discussion about pay.
I think it used to pay better.
Well, yeah, back in the day, you know, TV jobs, I mean, a main anchor making $500,000 would be pretty normal. And I think that's why a couple years ago, King 5 purged all its legacy people, because they probably were making too much money. So I think that's part of it, the pay. The stress, let me tell you, I mean, I love the stress. You know, I think Dory's the same way, like he feeds off the stress a little bit. And so I think you have to really, truly be the right personality for a job in journalism. But now you're dealing with the hate. You're dealing with, if you thought you were going to go into TV and be a fancy TV reporter and you realize, oh, I'm working 12 hours a day. I'm turning stories about things I don't care about. I'm my own photographer, my own editor.
I was just going to say that. It's not glamorous. You're more roles than just reporter now. You have to do all of your own.
Yeah, it's not glamorous. And I do think there's, unfortunately, a big segment of the people who get into TV news in particular who think it's going to be glamorous. And that's why I think what worked for me is I never wanted to be in TV. I went to college and did, you know, radio stuff. Mm-hmm. My first job, if you don't know, was here at Cairo Radio out of college. Ursula Reutin hired me. And I was doing crime and justice reporting. And so when I went to TV, it wasn't like, oh, this is glamorous. It was like, okay, same job, more makeup. That's really what it was.
And chop off your hair.
Yeah, and now, you know, some of these people who are on TV because they want to be seen, they could just be seen on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, if you're not ready to dig in, do the hard work, get paid not enough, then...
And that's why it doesn't pay as much, is because you can do it in so many different ways now that they don't have to pay one person that much. They're splitting the money between all these other people.
Yeah, so most regretted major, journalism. I don't regret my journalism major. I just wish I had paired it with something else. But okay. I think, you know,
that's kind of what I did. I did communications with media emphasis. So
or like political science or something.
Gave it a little more.
All right. Brandi Crews, filled with no regret, filling in for Dori Monson. Much more ahead. At some point, Nicole, we're going to talk about it. I've teased it twice now. We're going to talk about the city of Seattle being terrible with its money. But things just keep popping up. And we're rolling with it today on The Big Show. Monson. Man, I'm in the text line defending Dory's honor. Somebody's like, I didn't know you were friends with Dory. I've been friends with Dory for 12 years. Do we agree on everything politically? No. But I don't toss aside my lifelong friends because I have political differences with them. And I would hope you don't either. If that was the case, I'd have to toss out some of my family members because my family is just a bundle of different political beliefs. And Thanksgiving and Christmas are quite interesting. Eric Swalwell, there's a couple of stories about people and education and our kids. Swalwell said something on Twitter that said that involving parents in education is like, quote, putting patients in charge of their own surgeries. What does that even mean? that parents should have absolutely no role in their child's education? And this is this mentality that I think, and this is one of the things too. I don't know if Republicans beat the drum on education enough when it came to, you know, what our kids went through during the pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I think they were focused on other things and, you know, the economy and crime or whatever. But I think only towards the end did they really start to try to appeal to parents about the state of education. But yeah, Eric Swalwell says, and of course, Democrat, parents involved in education is like putting patients in charge of their own surgeries. And look, do I think that there can probably be some overbearing parents who, you know, your kid is in public school. At some point, you gotta trust the teacher to educate your child. Trust, but, you know, verify doesn't mean you have to be hands off. So I'm sure there are some teachers who are, or some parents who go a little too far in that regard. But to suggest that once you drop your kid off at the door of the school, you don't have a right to know or have a say in anything that they're doing inside the school is absolutely ridiculous.
So I think that was within a discussion about the NEA, the teachers union, that tweeted, "Educators love their students and know better than anyone what they need to learn and to thrive."
Yeah. National Education Association. Educators love their students and know better than anyone what they need to learn. Better than anyone?
Right.
DeMoss said,
you misspelled parent.
Well, and that's part of, and that was one of the appeals of Ron DeSantis when he did the Parental Rights and Education Act that the media just called the Don't Say Gay Bill, even though that was never the name of the bill, but the media adopted the phrasing that the opposition wanted them to adopt. But when you actually call it what it's called, it was the Parental Rights and Education Act, which I didn't think was perfect. But, you know, DeSantis, he really leaned into the education issue and the rights of parents in trying to determine that their child was getting a good education and what their kids should and should not be learning in school.
Yeah, I'm not sure when it became such a divisive thing. I don't know if it's always been like this. I don't know. I do think that probably for a long time, parents kind of just trusted the schools. And as that trust has kind of diminished, then now we have this pushback because these unions think they know best.
Well, and outright vilifying parents who had concerns about COVID, for instance. So Randi Weingarten, who's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, she fought really hard against reopening schools during the pandemic. She tweets out, "The bottom line is everyone suffered in the pandemic because of the pandemic. The disruption was everywhere, and it was bad, regardless of whether schools were remote or in person. We are focused now on the urgent need to help kids recover and thrive." Like, I'm not sure I trust you to be the one to help kids recover and thrive when you fought so hard to keep them out of school and vilified any parents who dared to raise concerns about whether the quality of their child's education was suffering greatly. And so, you know, it's just, again, it's that sort of mentality. The bottom line is everyone suffered. And it's also, there was that, gosh, what was that op-ed people lost it over where it said, oh, it pushed for COVID amnesty. Like, hey, let's not be too hard on people who did what they thought they needed to do during the pandemic and shut things down, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, that's fine. Like, I'm a forgiving person. I'm all about bridging political divides. I do give Governor Inslee in the first few months of the pandemic a little leeway for trying to deal with the situation.
Sure.
But there's a segment of this country and politicians who outright vilified anyone who dared to question whether it made sense to walk into a restaurant, sit at a table 3 feet away and wear a mask and then take it off. And it's like, now you want amnesty? Like, how about you apologize and admit, yeah, we were wrong. We're going to do things different moving forward. We're going to learn from our mistakes. And then we shall grant you amnesty.
Correct. They just want more power.
Yeah. Total gaslighting. All right. We're going to get a check on the news. There's a lot of news today. What's happening in Poland. I'm sure we'll get an update on that from CBS. And then we will continue as the Dori Monson Show rolls on. Brandi Crews filling in.